right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey. Professor Harvey, so where is the truth? I remember reading that blacks were in North America before Christopher Columbus and others ever came here. Is there any truth to that? Were blacks in this country before Europeans brought them here?
It's a matter of doing research, Earl. If you look at the Olmec statues down in Mexico, down near the Yucatan Peninsula, they have a lot of the African features in them. You know, and certainly you have pyramids in two different places. Certainly the Inca, the Maya, the Aztec, they had pyramids, step pyramids, but you had a large number of pyramids in Egypt and in Nubia, which is south of Egypt. You know, so when you look at the history that some people are talking about, there are two theories. There was one called the papaya theory, which said that probably sometime around between the 9th and the 12th century, people from Ethiopia or in Egypt probably sailed across, you know, the water, brought South Pacific, and they came to the Western Hemisphere. There's another one of the Malayan theory, which said that there was a king in West Africa with the Kingdom of Mali, who in the 13th century took his people and headed west, you know, from Mali and landed somewhere in either South America or Central America. That's called the Malayan theory. So there are some theories out there that says that could have possibly happened. But like I said, the research is not there yet on that. I mean, the people are busy just trying to follow the path that the European scholars started, you know, especially dealing with the age of exploration and beginning with the trips of the Vikings in the 10th and 11th century. So right now it's just a matter of doing research. But I have seen or read rumors about that. In Malifa Sante's African American History, A Journey of Liberation, he goes into extensive analysis on the fact that in fact may have happened.
Let's do this. Let's bring Al on. Hey, Al, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Professor Harvey, I have a question based upon what you said previously about the Constitution of the United States. Why hasn't Donald Trump and Pence been brought up on charges of treason?
Pence is not as bad as Donald Trump. But, you know, the bottom line is that in this country, and I think that Rachel Maddow did a good job in her podcast, Ultra, that dealt with this issue that we just, in this country, the Justice Department has not gone after those individuals like they should. They just haven't. And you can also trace it back to looking at one of the most bitter things that we had in the 1960s and 70s as young students was we were watching from 1965 all the way up through 1973. Watching the, you know, young Black Panthers being wiped out by a combined force of a group under what you call COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program. It did part by the CIA, the FBI, and the local police and state police. They went after the Black Panthers with a vengeance. Yet the Ku Klux Klan had been around in some version since 1865, and you've never seen anything of where they went after them like they should have. So there's always this dual system of treatment. And it is, like I said, it's a great question. There is no definitive answer except the fact that it's just neglect. Why is it that people like Donald Trump can get away with what he did? He led an insurrection. That was an insurrection. But because he claims immunity, he has money, he has a history of fighting and delaying something, and we just don't have a Justice Department, to my opinion, with the guts to go after him and go ahead and indict him.
So, Professor Harvey.
So that's where the problem
you,
is.
You and Al are both military veterans. How does it make you feel to know that, you know, the Constitution, all the things that, you know, you guys as veterans fought for, and yet we can't give special privileges to people? I mean, doesn't that defeat everything that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all the things that Americans hold dear? Shouldn't all Americans be outraged about that?
It should be, but you have to understand one of the most shocking things about the 2020 election was that 74 million people voted for Donald Trump. You know, despite all of his criminal activities and everything else, and they voted for him, period. You know, so it's a matter of trying to change the mindset of the American people, and there's no easy answer, you know, because this is something that's grown over time, and a lot of it has to do with a misinformation of history, misinformed, and American people, to be honest with you, Earl, you know, we can be lazy at times. You have to be active to live in a democratic society. We're lazy. We lack for people to spoon feed us, tell us what's going on instead of us finding out for ourselves. And that's one of the problems. So I have the same questions that, you know, that Al has. I think that, the man, he should have been really in that second impeachment when they had, you know, just before he left office, they should have gone ahead and impeached him then. And if the senators had done what they were supposed to do, and because a lot of Republicans did vote, some Republicans did vote in the Senate to impeach him. You needed 2/3 in the Senate. They should have impeached him. If they had gotten 60, Donald Trump would not be running for president again.
So Al,
it's going to really be up to the American people to deal with this.
Okay,
situation.
Al.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you want to respond?
Hello.
Yeah, okay, we got you. You want to respond what Professor Harvey had to say?
No, I wanted to know why he hasn't been brought up on.
Yeah.
Charges of treason,
yeah.
Not just the impeachment. Treason, he has committed several acts of treason over the years, and Pence co-signed on it, which makes him just as guilty. Both of them should have been brought up on treason, and they still should be. My question is, why hasn't that happened?
Like I said, that's a million-dollar question. I mean, why hasn't it happened? And I agree with you. There's certainly enough out there to get Trump. But keep in mind that Trump being former president of the United States, when they had the second impeachment trial, he should have been impeached. That would have eliminated all of it, and then they could have gone after him for treason and insurrection. If you take a look, Al, at the 13th Amendment, it goes after, you know, deals with, and the 14th Amendment. They both deal with this whole idea of insurrection. You know, you can't go against the Constitution of the United States and violate and break laws. See, treason, impeachment is just a political process. That's why Donald Trump pretty much laughed at it. Nothing happened to him. But they do have to go after him. Right now in Georgia, they're going after him. In New York, they're going after him. But that's a civil case in New York. But in Georgia, a young attorney, she happened to be an African American woman, if she follows through, they can get him in Georgia. So it is an ongoing process. It's frustrating. I know to most of us who are sitting around the television for months saying, well, you know, when are they going to drop the hammer on this guy? Because if they do that like they're supposed to, then we won't have to worry about that clown running again. He doesn't need to. He's dangerous. He's a dictator. He's a wannabe dictator. And he's shown us that he has nothing but utter contempt for us in the military and the whole bit. Yet, 53% of the people in the military in 2020 voted for Donald Trump. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, if you want to look at some of the residual effects of it, why he hasn't been indicted or something yet, it's because there's so many people backing him, and the Justice Department, it's shaking in their boots.
Hey, Al, thank you very much for the call. So you know, Professor Harvey, after we come back from the break, I want you to, when blacks arrived here based on the history that I was taught, and let's go back to that time, because I think that there's some things that we need to clear up there. We have to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey is on the line. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Robert Harvey from Charlotte, North Carolina. So Professor Harvey, you know, I didn't know as a young man, nobody taught me the history of what transpired, other than when we were brought here, and we're basically that we were unskilled is what I was told. And I didn't realize until much later in life, that when we came here, we were skilled. We were skilled laborers. We certainly were able, masons, able stone masons to build, and mathematicians and scientists and all of those different things. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, there's a lot of truth to it. There were a lot of them that were skilled. There were even those that were skilled in textile and certainly in cotton and the whole bit. Cotton was not new. A lot of them knew. But you got to also realize that the way the slave system worked, oftentimes, tribal groups or other ethnic groups were conquered by others, and the men, the ones that weren't killed off, some of the warriors, they ended up being captured and brought over here. So you had people with all different types of diverse skills coming over. And the amazing thing about it, Earl, is that there were many ethnic groups from Europe that came here the same way. Some of them were semi-skilled. Some of them were unskilled. They came here in groups. You know, by the thousands for decades, and even in some cases for centuries, coming from Western Europe, and they came here. It's just that when the Europeans got here, after indentured servitude ended pretty much in the middle of the 17th century, when whites were, you know, to serve out their time to pay for their trip over here, and then they were given their freedom, They were able to get their freedom and get land, but by the time we get to the middle of the 17th century in the United States, black people who came in under the same status in many cases ended up being slaves for life. Durante vida, they were slaves for life. So that's the clear distinction. One group was brought over. Some of them were skilled and semi-skilled, just like many people coming from Africa were. And they came here, and then eventually, because of the laws and the codes and the practices, one group ends up being slaves for life. The other ends up being given land that they took from the Native American in many respects. And they were able to go and settle down and have a start of life for themselves. So that's the story. That's the history. So, yeah, you when you try to understand that part of history, you realize that a lot of them were skilled. Some of them were, you know, kings and queens and princes.
But
there were also some who were semi-skilled.
So, Professor Harvey, when you hear, well, you know, others came here and were able to overcome the Irish and others who were basically mistreated in this country, but yet the Italians and others who were able to overcome, why have Africans who came here not been able to overcome? What would you say to that?
Because of structured racism. This is just a simple answer. There's nothing complicated about it. It was structured racism. You, on one hand, you set up the slave codes to govern the lives of black people to the point that by 1860, 90% of most people of Africa, well, 85% of most people of African descent were in slavery. Only 15% were free black, and they lived up north. But you got to also realize something else, Earl, and this is something that's oftentimes lost on history. The original 13 colonies, the four in the New England area, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, and then the mid-Atlantic states of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and the southern states of Virginia, North Carolina, Delaware, Maryland, South Carolina, and Georgia, all of them, all of the original 13 colonies, Earl, all of them had slavery, all of them. And even after slavery ended in many of the northern states after the American Revolution, many of those states continued to build ships that engaged in the slave trade. So, and they had factories. Most of the factories dealing with the products that the slaves were producing in the slave states, those factories up north were the ones processing them. So you have a whole host of situations that institutionalized race. The North had no incentive because they were getting the benefits of free slave labor from the South. And the South, certainly their greatest asset, even up to the eve of the Civil War and after, their greatest asset were slaves.
Yeah, free labor.
That was their greatest asset.
Free labor.
Yes, for free labor. But just the investment, though, earlier, wasn't just the free labor. It was the investment. That was their greatest economic commodity. That's what Lincoln saw in 1862.
Professor Harvey, hold it thought.
It led him to say, you know, to break this up.
Hold a thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey's on the line. You can join us, too. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, it always amazed me to know that when Europeans came here, they were given land grants to begin farming for free. And when African Americans were freed from slavery, weren't given anything. I mean, that's part of the history, and people should understand that. Why people who had been here and had been enslaved weren't given anything, and yet people who came from overseas were given these opportunities of free land to farm.
Well, you know, in some parts of the northern parts of the original 13 colonies, there were some African Americans who were given some, you know, able to either obtain or given some tracts of land. But you got to also realize that there were a lot of Europeans that when they first came over, they didn't get that either, especially if some of those who were in indentured servitude, they didn't get it either. And many of them that came after in the late 18th and 19th and even into the 20th century, early 20th century, many of them that came over were just unskilled common laborers coming from southern and eastern Europe. You know, so when people, you know, you have to be I was always very careful not to paint a broad brush and talking about a history, because every group went through some transition when they came over here. It wasn't all peaches and cream when the Europeans came over. Many of them were fleeing for their lives, because of religious freedom and religious toleration. We got to understand it. Like I said, one of the things about history is that if you aren't inclusive in doing their presentations on it, you're going to miss something.
So, Professor Harvey, when the Europeans came over, no other group was brought over intently to be slaves. Europeans weren't brought over to be slaves.
That is true. But you got to realize that some of them were brought in over as slaves, but so were some of the Europeans. But most Europeans were not. That is correct. You're absolutely correct on that. But there was a common bond that's called indentured servitude that existed. And with that indentured servitude, you begin to track it, you know, and in the 1630s and 20s and 40s, 1620s, 30s, and 40s, you find that in some of those colonies, whites and blacks worked in the field together as indentured servants. They were in bondage. But then by the time we get to the 1660s, that has changed, and it becomes a racially identified institution. So, yes, and most blacks who were brought over, you know, after the late 17th century, which are the 1600s, and in the 1800s, they were brought over en masse in large numbers. And remember, and this is something that I really am proud of the people that work with the 1619 Project.
Right.
But what I always say to that is you're missing a major part of Africa's arriving in the Western Hemisphere, because most African slaves that came to the New World, most of them came and were brought to South America. Remember, in Portugal, which is what colonized Brazil, had the largest number. Brazil has the largest population of people of African descent in the world outside of Africa. The United States only got about 4 million, 2 to 4 million. But in Brazil, they brought in huge numbers, so that today they have the largest black population in the Western Hemisphere. And that is something that history doesn't know. I mean, a lot of my students were shocked to find that out. Even President George Walker Bush had to be reminded by Condoleezza Rice at some function they had when he was in office that Brazil had the largest black population outside of Africa. So those are things that we have to realize. And I saw an excerpt from one of the formats that DeSantis and his people were putting together with that educational group, talking about only about 2 million Africans were brought to the New World, to the United States as slaves. And my thing is, yes, but the bottom line is that they also engaged in some other things. For example, they talked about how in the Africans that were brought over, the English didn't work them to death. They just simply decided to inbreed them. So from their original group, they bred their African peoples, whereas in South America, in some cases, they worked them until they died and they just got some more. And that part of the history has some truth to it.
And Professor Harvey even inbred many.
Oh, yes. And much of that miscegenation. Much of that miscegenation involved whites really engaging in eugenics, trying to get the best product right from birth. And that's why they put such a prize on women that were pregnant. And oftentimes the offspring of the slave was produced by white men. White men pretty much had a carte blanche to do what they wanted to do. It was their property, they could do what they wanted to do. So those histories, you know, when we talk about the 1619 Project, the only objection I have to it is you're missing such an important part of the history, because instead of just looking at the English, the Spanish and the Portuguese were the ones in the early 15th century that had the greatest response to bringing slaves to the New World. They were followed by the English. That in the 18th century, the English were the ones who had brought the largest number over here, because they controlled the ocean and they controlled the slave contract known as the Asiento. And the Asiento was issued by the Spanish to bring slaves to their colonies in the New World. And the Portuguese, the Dutch, the French, and the English, all of them made millions and millions of dollars over 3.5 centuries of delivering slaves to the New World.
So, Professor
Harvey.
And
the English were the main culprits because they were a commercial entity.
Professor Harvey, hold that thought. Let's bring in CJ. CJ, good morning. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Professor Harvey. As I listen to the history and the distortion you give to what Governor DeSantis said and believes, I have a simple question. And Judge Marshall did not answer either. I believe it's a simple yes or no question. And your explanation afterwards.
You can't give the professor a simple. You can't give the professor a simple yes and no question. Okay.
Of course you won't, because the mere fact that Judge Everett Marshall believes in reparations and won't come out and say it.
Well, hold on. Where did Professor Harvey distort what Ron DeSantis had to say?
Because the reason why they already teach history in Florida, and they talk about slavery. Florida is where woke goes to die. So the mere fact that you want to distort what Florida's doing, the same way you did with the Don't Say Gay bill, because it didn't say that. It was for kindergarten through third graders, the parental educational rights bill, the distortion that your side gives every day, I believe. Do you want reparations? That's the question. Yes or no, Earl and Professor Harvey?
As I said to you, Professor Harvey, first off, do you want to respond to him claiming you distorted what?
Well, that's why he missed the boat. He missed the boat. They must have missed the boat that came over from Europe or somewhere. The bottom line is that I never even talked about that, and I never talked about sex. I mean, the sex thing, I haven't even touched that. I'm talking now about Here you have, and I tell you, one way to prove that Ron DeSantis is off base, and so is Sanders, Huckabee Sanders, and so is Abbott, and the rest of them that are doing it. In the South, you have 103 historical black colleges. Why were they created? They were created because white institutions at the time that black people came out of slavery wouldn't even allow them to go to college. In fact, it was against the law for African Americans not to even get an education. And it's part of the slave codes. And go back and read into the slave codes. And so Earl is talking about land. Education was denied. It was against the law for blacks to even read and write. But the amazing story about that is that they came out of slavery creating institutions and getting an education. And they found out that the doors were closed in the southern white schools. So they had to create their own. And when you talk about the woke concept, woke goes to die, that's ignorance going there to die. There's no waking up there. That's ignorance. That is total, you know, malicious ignorance to sit here and try to go back into the 20th, to the 18th, 19th, and the early 20th century, trying to paint history in a way that says it tried to be benign slavery. Slavery was an evil and dangerous institution. And there's no way you can justify that. None. You can try to clean it up, but you can't. And the reason that they give for all those who want to create these woke pieces of legislation is that it may make students feel uncomfortable. Yes, the truth is going to make you feel uncomfortable. It's like a sinner being taught something from the Bible. He's going to feel uneasy until he cleans his act up. And the same is true with history. You can't sit there and talk well about history and not offend somebody. Try to do that with World War II. There are some children in that classroom who are German, of German descent, who are going to feel uncomfortable. But that's too bad, because that's history. You got to teach it. You can't sit there and get around it. Florida is sitting on land that at one time was inhabited by the Seminole Indians, a very proud people who had their land taken away from them by the government and turned over to whites so that they could grow their agricultural products and have slavery. The Native American was sacrificed for his land, and the African was sacrificed for his labor. That's the basic history that they're trying to whitewash. And no matter how you try to defend that, all those other things you want to throw in about it, about sexuality and the whole bit, that's another whole issue we can take up, and we can discuss it. But no one will ever convince me that you can talk nice about history and leave out the ugly part, because that part has to be taught. And as Americans, we need to learn that. And our children need to learn it, because if they don't, they are going to get a black eye when they go out in that world that's integrated.
Professor
Harvey, they're
going
to find out.
Is it safe to say that CJ even needs to learn the history himself?
Obviously, he's missed the boat.
Right,
He was asleep in history class, and I don't know what he was doing when he was sitting there. But he didn't. And maybe he had the right teacher. Maybe he had a different teacher. But if he'd got the right teacher, you don't have to agree with everything, but you certainly have to learn the history, and good and bad. You have to take the good and the bad.
We gotta go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. On the line, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's go to Jake from Eureka, California. Hey, Jake, how you doing? You say what?
Yeah, you know, a conservative jerk like CJ, he's never going to learn how to think, no matter how many times Aretha, you know, pleads him to do so. But the fact is, Florida, okay, give me a break. Florida is the place where failed fascist dictators go to die. You know, like Bolsonaro from Brazil, the traitor Trump, you know, from New York City. He's not even from Florida, but he had to flee to Florida because he doesn't want to go to prison in New York State for all the crimes he committed while he lived there. And of course, don't forget Manuel Noriega, you know, another failed dictator that Florida, was host to him for his final few years in prison. Maybe that'll be the same with Trump and Bolsonaro. Who knows? But the idea that anybody from Florida or South Carolina, sorry, Nikki Haley, sorry, Lindsey Graham, that anybody from either Florida or South Carolina is going to be elected president, good luck with that. All right? California's going to have to throw a veto on that one. Sorry. You know, we're not going back to the Confederacy. We're not going back to slavery, no matter how much Republicans may wish it. And God dang, you know, Abraham Lincoln must be spinning in his grave right now.
All right, Jake. Thank you very much for the call.
Ronald Reagan, too. Yeah, Ronald Reagan, too. You know, and the Bushes, both of them. I mean, because you don't, those individuals, Colin Powell, all of them, they, you know, they and even Joe Scarborough, I mean, at one time he was one of those individuals, too. But the bottom line is that the travesty about the Florida and that new woke movement that they're pushing, they've got to get their base riled up and suddenly play the race card. That's all it is. It's playing the race card. And it's going to catch up with them. You know, and one of the things that I think we need to do, and as a people in this country, those of us who are really aware of the danger of that wokeness movement, is there needs to be boycotts of Florida.
So,
I know Disney's catching hell with them right now. We need the nationwide boycott.
So hang on. Let's bring Professor Cassandra on from Madison. Hey, Cassandra, how you doing? Welcome to Professor Bob Harvey.
Oh, Earl, thank you for taking my call. And I have just been sitting here grading papers and enjoying listening to the wisdom of Professor Harvey. And I hope you're having a blessed retirement. We could use more professionals like you right now in our field. And I'm going to keep it quick because I don't know how much time you have. But here is my observation on DeSantis. And I wanted to get Harvey's perspective on this. The problem right now with our African-American history or even studies is that we are not precise with our language. And that is allowing other topics to be introduced into our studies. For example, I am not opposed to studying, to including queer studies or students learning about that. But is that really the appropriate place? Is that topic appropriate to have in an African-American studies class? Because if you think about the Black liberation struggle, there was never a national mass mobilization movement for queer rights. If I'm incorrect, please correct me. And so therefore, I believe DeSantis is a bigot, but I don't think queer studies belongs in that African-American AP program. And I would just love to hear your thoughts on it. And thank you for all that you're doing today.
You know, Cassandra, he's going to be back on the 23rd. So, all right. Okay, Professor.
Well, quickly, ma'am, I appreciate your response. Understand one thing. Don't be fooled by it. The front here, they talk about gay rights and the whole bit, and they don't want that taught. That's not what they're doing. That's not what they're after. They are after African-American studies. The key here is African-American studies. It has nothing to do with Hispanic studies. I mean, you got people in Texas learning Spanish all over the place. You know, they can't help the ATM machines and everywhere else. But they're aiming at African-American history. That is their number one target. That has always been the motivator for Southern white politics and social dynamics and economics and law enforcement and in all those categories. The key here is to be able, and this is one of the reasons why I love teaching multifaceted history on cause and effect, because you have to be able to understand what are they really after. This is all about going after, because you know they started off with critical race theory. And then they kept yelling about Antifa. And then now they've gone from net to woke. It's all about going after the African-American experience, because as African-Americans go, the other groups are going to go too, whether they're gay, Latino, you know, Native American, Asian American, even Jewish Americans are catching it. But the main target of that cultural ultra-conservative movement is going after black folk, the same one that Earl has been talking about dealing with the 1619 Project, enslavement and the whole bit. We have been their number one target. And that's one of the reasons why when I respond to people saying that they're sick and tired of racism, my thing is, then damn it, stop doing it. If you wanna end racism, then stop doing it, because racism is about power. And he who controls the power, that's the one that does it. Remember what Alex Haley said in the last areas, parts of his book on Roots. History is written by the victor, not by the victim. And African-Americans have been victims too long. And what African-American history has done is helped to liberate that to a point where it led to the results of the Million Man March. It led to the results of all these other things. Those things of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment didn't happen by accident. It happened because 186,000 African-Americans fought to preserve the Union, and 38,000 of them died, and 20 of them won the Medal of Honor. Coming out of slavery, the one that we're supposed to be cowards, we're supposed to be incapable of deep thought, but we fought and we have saved the Union, and 20 of them won the Medal of Honor as a result of the American Civil War. So we have paid that dues, and we will continue to pay those dues. And as a military historian as well, I've always been proud of the fact that when I put on that uniform, I'm thinking of that I'm representing, you know, Sergeant William H. Kearny. I'm looking at Milton Oliver III. I'm thinking about all those individuals who have served this country and represented it. So we paid our dues.
So, Professor Harvey, unfortunately, we got to leave it there until the 23rd, next Thursday. Can't wait to get back to you. Thank you all. For taking the time out. We'll be right back.